Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Michael Kist.
You caught me not listening again.
Benjamin Solak.
You never listen!
It's the Kist and Solak Show, presented by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation.
You are flying high on the Kist and Solak Show. This is episode 182, brought to you by the fine folk at SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist. Follow me on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. That's K-I-S-T. As always, joined by the best doggone co-host in the game, Mr. 9-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother? You look a little tired. You look a little tired. You get some sleep?
I got a lot of sleep last night. In the nights previous, I had not. So yeah, I mean, it's the end of draft weekend. You know, the war of attrition is over, but the injuries are still being healed. So yeah, I'm ready. You know, I'm going to take a walk today. I'm going to look at a leaf, hear a bird. It's going to be great. It was good. It was a good draft weekend. It was a profitable draft weekend. It was a active day three for the Eagles as well, which was a lot of fun. We weren't sitting through two rounds of nothingness waiting for some seventh round pick. They were moving around and they were adding and getting a lot of players in. So, yeah, no, I'm good. I've just got three questions, Mike.
Yeah.
Can he run? Is he healthy? Does he like to play football? That's all I want to know.
Did you see people in the mentions like, actually pissed off that the Eagles are targeting fast, healthy, high character guys?
My favorite thing is like, I saw a couple of responses that were like, and they didn't look at anything else,
right,
and I wanted to be like,
come on.
Yeah. Yeah, they were just like, all right, fast, no injuries, whatever. And also, it was funny because, like, you know, not for nothing, Marquise Goodwin's a little banged up, guys.
Right.
You know, but like, I think exchanging sixth round picks for a guy who has been in the league is it makes a lot of sense. My favorite thing about can he run, is he healthy, does he love football? Firstly, I walked into his office and written on a piece of paper, like, okay, shut up. You know
that's
what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
so dramatic, yeah. So, it's too much.
Number one. And number two, I love how they like are telling us this now, as if we're all going to be like,
oh.
Exactly. Like, yeah, you want to know why that was your idea? Because you didn't have any fast guys last year. Want to know who told you that? Us. Like, and obviously, like, you know, they knew it too, and like it's reprioritizing, and like this is the single we've been covering draft classes for Philadelphia now. You and I, this is our third one, no, fourth one, 2017, 2018, 2019, and this one.
Yeah,
right, because we started with Derek Barnett.
Right,
this is by far the most athletic class they've ever drafted by a mile,
by a ton.
And I think if you even go back probably later, this is a ridiculously athletic class for them.
Yeah, they bet on athletes.
Yeah.
Do you want to kind of go through the picks and we'll kind of go from
there?
All right.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, we'll recap the picks. Since this is going to be like a draft recap, we'll go through and then we'll start to talk about them. But first round at 21st overall, Jalen Reagor, wide receiver TCU. We all know this. Round two, pick 53, Jalen Hurts, quarterback Oklahoma. Round three, number 103. Tavion Taylor, linebacker, Colorado. We talked about this on the previous Kist and Solak show. We recapped all three of those picks. So I also did a solo episode detailing the fourth round picks, which was Kevon Wallace. Is it Kevon or Kayvon?
Kayvon.
Kayvon. I've been saying it wrong the entire time. Kayvon Wallace.
I considered doing a tweet about it, but then I was like, it's too early to be obnoxious about pronunciation. They all just met him.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kayvon Wallace.
Kayvon Wallace, safety, Clemson slash nickel. We'll talk about that. Also in the fourth round, Jack Driscoll, the offensive lineman from Auburn, who might play some guard, might play some tackle. Fifth round, number 168, John Hightower, wide receiver, Boise State. I had done a piece talking about five burners, and Hightower was in there as a guy that the Eagles could target. So they go with the speed there again. In the sixth round, there's three picks. Sean Bradley, linebacker, Temple. Quez Watkins, a wide receiver, Southern Miss, also in that burner piece. And then at 210, there's Prince Tega Winogo, nailed it, offensive tackle from Auburn. And then in the seventh round, final pick, 233, Casey Tuhill, the defensive end out of Stanford. So the consensus from the hall here from fans is that this is anywhere from a B to a C class. That's where the poll results on Bleeding Green Nation show. That's the majority of the media members range. I think that's the proper ballpark. You certainly felt better about the hall as the Eagles distanced themselves from a head-scratching day two. Wallace, Driscoll, Hightower all made a ton of sense. I especially love Wallace. I hadn't watched Sean Bradley yet, the linebacker from Temple, but I had a person from within the Temple program. I've known him for years. He knows my type of linebackers
Calm
that I
down.
Like. He texted me and
we
he said,
get it. You know other people. You have friends. Okay, whatever.
He texted me. He said that I would love Sean Bradley. Quez Watkins adds even more speed along with the six-round pick swap that also netted Marquise Goodwin from the 49ers. We're going to talk more in depth about the wide receivers later, but as far as the last pick, I had no idea who Casey Tuhill is. He tested well. And Ben, check this out. I know somebody with the Stanford program because I have friends and only your mother loves you, which is all you got. So he told me that he's probably just a practice squad candidate, which for a seventh-round pick, that makes sense.
You want to know why they drafted Tuhill? I know exactly why they drafted Tuhill.
Why?
Connor Barwin likes him.
Oh, Connor Barwin. There you go.
Oh. So when I was stalking Connor Barwin at the Shrine Bowl, you know, we rewind the timeline here.
I remember,
me following Connor Barwin around trying to get a picture of him. He was there with Andy Weidel. No, he was there with Tim Ward. Andy Weidel was there, obviously, but he was working with Tim Ward, who's one of the Eagles scouts, who's an ex-defensive line coach. And Barwin was looking at the edge rushers. And I remember him watching Tuhill and talking about Tuhill. And I was like, I should tweet this out. And then I was like, I've probably tweeted out too many Connor Barwin things, I haven't said at this point in my in the last weekend or so. So I did not. But he liked Tuhill. Wouldn't be surprised if that was like a he stands on the table for him and they pick him for that or whatever. I watched Tuhill's film and he's like is a seventh rounder, but he's fun because he's very Joe Osmany.
Yeah.
I can't even remember Joe Osman's last name because he's rush linebacker. Can drop if you need him to. Probably dropped more at Stanford than he'll drop for Philadelphia. Mm. I don't know if you watched Peter Kalambai out of Stanford a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Is that sort of a vibe?
You know
what I mean?
Sense.
Like, yeah, like he's just a fine rusher. Like, it's nothing special. If he sticks, it'll be for special team stuff.
Yeah.
But he's not bad getting after the passer. Not bad working the outside track, getting the quarterback to step up in the pocket. And then he's versatile. He can drop. So no, I when they picked him, I was like, I know this name, like I know this dude. So I was pleased with that.
So all that said, I think when you look at the class overall, and then we'll start to dial in on some things, the question of Rager versus Lamb versus Jefferson is always going to be there, and we probably won't get solid answers on that for a bit. And also the question of if you'd rather have Lamb than Rager and Hurts, that will always loom. So the high picks have questions or are just flat out mind numbing. Like I think both of us like Rager, so that's not the issue, but there are other questions. And who knows, maybe the Hurts pick turns out to be incredible foresight and we're just idiots, but it's hard to justify it right now with the scheme the Eagles have and the money being spent at quarterback already. And for that reason, I'll go with a meaningless but emphatic C grade. Ben, what about you?
Yeah, well, I think like, you know, meaningless but emphatic, right? I think it is important. Like, whether or not you want to grade things, like, this is a C. You know, like, right. It's hard to, like say exactly what, like, a C means when it comes to the nuances of a draft class. And, like, are you considering the Marquise Goodwin trade? Are you considering the Darius Slay trade?
Right.
You know, move backs and everything like that. So, like, you know, one letter, difficult. It's very important, though, to talk about whether or not this was a good draft within the context of what we know about the players now. Because the thing is, like, these players are going to be either a lot better or a lot worse than we think they are. And we can't judge a class by how good the players turn out. You have to judge the class based off the information that you have when the picks were made.
Right.
Because good process is going to yield more positive results over time than just the positive feedback of one group, right? Of one happenstance, of one individual class. So with that said, this wasn't a good draft. I like the Jalen Rager pick. At 21, he was appropriate value for me. Jalen Hurts was a ridiculous pick that is inexcusable, even if Jalen Hurts turns out good. 53 overall is not the time for you to be drafting quarterback of the future, quarterback two, developmental quarterback, don't care what you call him.
Mm-hmm.
Davion Taylor with big time reach.
Yep.
And then you have enough picks on day three to move around and acquire overall Kevin Wallace, John Hightower, Sean Bradley, Quez Watkins, Prince Tagovailoa, Casey Tuhill, and Marquise Goodwin. And that's great, but it is too little too late. If you're lucky, you're getting two contributors out of this group.
Right. Right.
And that's the thing is like a good day three feels great, especially after what was freaking, you know, day two for the Eagles.
And you know how I feel about day three. That can only shape my opinion so much of it, you know?
I remember saying to Mare when, like, the day was over, I was like, I'm so mad at them for making me like their day three class.
Right.
Because, like, I don't want to be happy with them right now. I don't want to be pleased. Yeah. Like, I think, like, day three was great. Like, I love the process. I love the trading back. And I love the drafting multiple players of the exact same mold in Watkins and Goodwin and Hightower and saying one of you is going to turn out good. Doesn't really matter who, but like one of you is going to stick and we're just going to increase our chances of getting one of you to stick. And I like that. That's great. It's just the difficult aspect of it for me is it's a little too late. Like if we talk about year one impact for this class, Rager hopefully gets wide receiver two amount of targets. Like, right. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and like, yeah, it's like, you know,
that'd be a success.
65.
Yeah.
70. Right. Kayvon Wallace plays in sub packages. Kyle Wallace is fifth defensive back on the field. And that might already even be a little bit much of an expectation given how many slots the Eagles have.
I do like the fact that, like, with Kayvon, I think he's more of a nickel. You don't need him to start this year with Nickel Robey Coleman heel, but Nickel Robey Coleman's only on a 1 year deal. I think we'll see if this pick of Wallace is a success, if he can take over that nickel spot in like year two. I think that'd be a big win.
Here's my tricky thing with Kayvon. He right now projects into exactly the same role for me as the role that they kind of want to just throw Jalen Mills into.
Right. Yeah.
With no like idea of what's happening. And while I understand that Corey Undlin is gone, Jim Schwartz is still here. And if Kayvon Wallace is competing with Jalen Mills for any role, Jalen Mills is going to win. Because as we've seen to this point in his career, it doesn't matter if he's better or worse than the alternatives. Jalen Mills ends up with the starting job.
100% of the time. Yeah.
It's tricky to figure out exactly how the Eagles' safety room is going to go. Kayvon is not currently capable of taking the Malcolm Jenkins role.
Correct.
Which, like, he is a fourth round pick. So, you know, there's about two safeties who I thought were capable of doing it. I'm on the record as saying for a Malcolm Jenkins understudy, Kayvon's one of those dudes that I wanted. I said it was Chin, Duggar, and then Kayvon. That was before the Eagles let Jenkins go in free agency. And all of a sudden, you don't have the guy to teach the guy. You need the guy to win on his feet. And it's just the level of processing and instincts that you need to have for that is really tricky.
There's a larger talking point that we can talk about later on when it comes to defensive backs coach Marco Emanuel. But outside of that, like, how are you feeling? We'll dial back in on, like, the grade. Did you give a grade? I don't think you gave a grade. Are you?
Like, I'm going to, like, say, like, this max is out as a C for me. It's probably lower. You can't be out here wasting pick 53 and then expect to get a good grade from me. I don't care what you did on day three. I do. I think it was awesome, but I don't.
So, I mean, I looked at PFF's grades, and they gave the class an A-. They were one of the higher ones on it, and that's because, like us, they love Kevon Wallace and Mike Renner, friend of the show and all-around handsome fellow, said that he dug the Hurts pick. So there are people out there that do like the pick, and I think that round two, that Hurts pick, is the determining factor in your grade. But, Ben, you want to kick back on that and at Mike Renner via audio form, right?
No, I mean, like, I love Mike. You good dude. I just, like, the Hurts pick is theoretically good, and just in practice it isn't. It just isn't. I can't tell you. Like,
we don't know what this mystery offense designed around Hurts looks like anyway, because it ain't the Philadelphia Eagles offense. That doesn't fit Hurts.
I will about face on the Hurts pick immediately in the event that there is a way to get him on the field consistently on offense in a reliable and predictable two quarterback offense, which has not existed at the NFL level. So, like, you know, if listen, but it's like I said, I think I tweeted this out because people early on day three were like talking about the two QB thing. And I was like, listen, if I had a grand plan for a two quarterback offense, I also would not be telling anybody, including my own media. Right. I would also take a whole summer's worth of complete fire from the media.
Yep.
If it meant I could roll out in week one Hurts and Wentz both in the backfield at the same time and nobody was ready for it.
Right.
Yes. So if and when, then absolutely. I'll be like, this is the greatest pick of all time. I'll love it. It'll be great. And like, I feel very comfortable and then changing my idea on it because this obviously changes the game. In the event that it's exactly what the Eagles are, selling it as, we just think that the quarterback position is so valuable that we're going to make other positions worse in order to make it better. No.
When we come back on the Kiss and Solak show, we're going to talk about the work cut out for some of the positional coaches and these rookies and guys that have been brought in. That's coming up next here on the Kiss and Solak show.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
And we are back here on the Kist and Solak Show, episode 182, Bleeding Green Nation, SB Nation, bringing it to you. Michael Kist here with Benjamin Solak. Ben, I said we were talking about some of the work cut out for these coaches, like in terms of how this group of wide receivers that they've brought in that we've been talking about, how they can be successful. Just looking at it overall, there's an interesting angle here that I tweeted out last night, but I haven't really seen much discussion about. The big storyline, obviously, is speed. That's what people want to talk about. And they're not wrong to highlight that factor, of course. You went from a slow, plodding offense to what now has several insurance policies in place after a throw it out the wall and see what sticks mentality during the draft process. I don't have to tell you DeSean Jackson, Jalen Reagor, Marquise Goodwin, John Hightower, and Quez Watkins are fast. We all get that. But here's the rub. Eagles wide receiver coach Aaron Moorhead is the sixth wide receivers coach for the Eagles since 2015. That's been well documented.
Defense against the dark arts.
The only one of those other five that you could say was actually good at his job was Mike Rowe. And I remember talking with Jimmy Kemsky about Rowe's approach to coaching the position in his first training camp, and he was very impressed. And, you know, as we know, he got the best season out of Aguilar. Alshon comes in. That works out well in the end. He comes on, so on and so forth. He was promoted out of that position, and the carousel continues. What Moorhead is tasked with, it's difficult, considering the circumstances. Now, first, what does he have to do? First, I think you take Hightower and Quez Watkins and you put them in one bucket. If he can get one of those two six-rounders to a point where they're legitimately rosterable, that's a win. It's a six-round pick. Yeah, they're fast. But hitting 50% on a player that's capable of contributing in the sixth round is a lot harder than it sounds. So that's one. The second is getting Jalen Reagor up to speed with the offense. Reagor has plenty of talent. That's not the question. But he also wasn't asked to do a whole lot within the TCU offense, which is not his fault. It's theirs. It's TCU's fault. Because when given the chance, Reagor showed that he could snap people off and make guys miss in space with the ball in his hands. Now, think about this. He only had 9 screens come his way in 2019.
It's less than 10.
In a world of college football offense, that is criminal for a guy of his talents. Put that in contrast with Brandon Ayuk, 25 screens. Brian Edwards from South Carolina, 36 of them. Doggone Devin Duvernay of Texas had 42 screens thrown his way. 42.
Right.
Come on. And Reagor can only get 9? That tells me right there you don't know how to use them, especially when your quarterback is so horrendous that Reagor has one of the highest uncatchable target rates in the nation. So they put him out there at X receiver 85% of the time, where his quarterback can't reach him 100% of the time. They don't feed him manufactured touches. All the things that the Eagles have been desperately searching for from a run after catch guy, they tried it with Nelson Aguilar in 2018. That didn't work. They traded for Golden Tate because that was his calling card. They got mixed results there, and he's gone anyway. They'll be able to do it with Reagor, but dialing back to the point, Aaron Moorhead has got to get Reagor ready with a route tree, with convertible routes on a level that he just never experienced with at TCU. Reagor has got to be coached up on, hey, this is a post against middle of the field open. This is a corner against middle of the field closed. They may roll post snap, but here's what you do in that case. And you also XYZ that can change your landmark, blah, 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 blah. He's got to get him all that coached up, right? He didn't do any of that last year at TCU. So that's number two. Number three, work with the existing wide receivers that are there. Guys like DeSean, who you don't have to worry about, but guys like Greg Ward, right? Ward has had issues getting on the same page with Wentz and understanding his landmarks for the better part of the season. There's still more work to be done there. He got better at it. Plus, you've got the addition of Marquise Goodwin. You've got to get him, you know, acclimated into the system. And number four, you have to help J.J. Arcega-Whiteside take a step. Now, how he can make the excuse, and I can make the excuse because I liked the pick at the time. So did you, Ben. I'm not hiding from that. But you can say J.J. had a lower body injury and it's tough for a rookie wide receiver to contribute. And he was always a 2 to 3 year projection, blah, 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 blah. Throw that all out. Doesn't matter. He's got to prove it this year because otherwise he is just taking up a roster spot. And I'm not going to get trapped in some sunken cost fallacy over what could be a bad evaluation at a high capital draft pick. So Aaron Moorhead has to get him up to speed. So that's four big factors: getting value out of late round rookies, getting your first round pick up to speed, working with the vets to get the most out of them, and getting J.J. to evolve. If Aaron Moorhead can accomplish a good portion of that, you are no longer worried about the wide receiver position because that's a hefty task that is going to get a lot of positive results, my friend. And he's going to have to do it in unprecedented circumstances where, at least for now, it's going to be done virtually. I mean, here's where we're at right now. Do we know that there is a rookie minicamp? We don't know. Is there a full or even abbreviated training camp? We have no idea. What does preseason look like, right? So you have all these factors that Moorhead has to nail in his first year and all of these factors working against him in the worst possible conditions for it. So do I have my doubts? Yes. Is it possible he could pull this off to some degree? For sure. Am I going to continue to ask myself questions and then answer them on my own? Who can say? But there is a lot riding on this. For the offense to succeed and reach the levels we think it can fully utilize all that speed that they brought in, not only do they need injury luck when guys weren't able to train the way that they're used to, but they need a first-year wide receiver coach to prove that he's got the juice. So to wrap all this up, there's a self-awareness in this strategy of throw it all at the wall that I love. It's a team that is on the third cycle of weapons for Wentz, saying we can't just take one extra swing at wide receiver. We need to take all of the swings. That's good. Because that self-awareness was lacking with the Hurts pick, in my opinion, and that was our big gripe. So that gives me hope. But for all of it to click, you need certain things to happen, and a lot of it is on Moorhead's shoulders. Ben, any follow-up thoughts with that?
Right. Well, I think that the whole, like, the kicker being that there may not even be camp this year is a pretty big deal because, well, it's like rolling it all the way back to J.J. last year and the theory behind, oh, like, you know, he's got to learn multiple positions and he's got to be able to play multiple spots and he's got to learn across the receiver room. You just might not be able to do that this year. Like, right. That is a worthy approach. And I believe that, like, I can't say it's the correct approach because I think that you can achieve things multiple ways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I also have never coached a wide receiver in my life, so I should shut up. But, like, I think it's a worthy approach. I think it, like, makes sense in terms of, like, how you want to develop a guy.
For a rookie to see the field, if he's not a starter, you kind of have to do that. You have to have him ready for those different, you know, things.
Right. Yeah, which, like, it's tough. Like, we always talk about receiver rooms as basketball teams, right? And, like, the thing about good basketball teams is you have a 3 who can play the 4 and you have a 4 who can play the 5 and you have a 2 who can play the 1 or the 3 and, like, so on and so forth. So you might not be able to do that this year flat out just as a result of the limitations of Corona, which means that now, you know, and like other general managers had quotes where they were like, we really tried to focus on pro ready players this year because of Corona. And I don't think I've seen a Roseman quote to that effect. Maybe I've missed it completely. But what you have to understand that you have with Rager, and I hesitate to say, like, anti-Tower and Watkins just because they're day 3 picks and, yeah, I'm not sure that they're going to get that playing time early. But what you have to understand that you have with Rager is, like, you have to use him as a field stretcher first because that's how he was used in TCU. And it's not going to be his best deployment in year 1, but, like, that's just where he's going to be familiar enough in terms of what he's going to do in his route distribution, getting down the field and separating, just generally uncovering, that's kind of the role you have to play him in early, which I think is tricky, especially because if you have a healthy Deshaun, then you've got two guys you want to be sending vertical. But honestly, like, it's kind of what the Eagles offense needs. They need outside guys who can go vertical, and then they win with the tight ends on the inside. I have no idea how J.J. fits into this picture.
Right, yeah, that's the
tricky part. I'll tell you, and, like, that's large part because he didn't fit into any picture last year either. They didn't put him on the field. I mean, so we don't really know what he can do. Especially if you walk into week 1 with Alshon still on the roster. Because, right, like, with everything that's gone on with Alshon, you're still going to play him. As I have held and will continue to hold, Alshon's still a good football player. The thing about being huge and having great hands is that you don't need to be able to separate to be huge and have great hands.
Right.
You know, so, like, even with diminishing athleticism, he still has a role. He still has value. He's definitely, if he's on the field, JJ's not. So you may be out here playing your rookie and benching your sophomore, but it's kind of the hole you dug yourself into in terms of the pick that you made and then the need that you created for yourself in terms of getting speed on the field. I think if you talk about what the wide receiver one depth chart looks like, the wide receiver depth chart looks like in week one, I should say. We know Deshaun's starting. I would say Rager is confirmed starting. And then it's Alshon slash J-Jaw. Like, I don't know. But I would imagine J-Jaw would be the player that they would have as the X in the event that Alshon was traded. Rager and Deshaun are going to switch Z and slot for you. And that's your starting three. Hightower and Watkins, like I said, I just don't know how you take those players and you get them ready for NFL usage. I mean, like Hightower, you can get him running a vertical third tree because he did it enough at Boise.
Yeah.
I'm not going to claim to have watched enough of Watkins to know exactly what his route capacity is, but I know for a fact that he doesn't play through contact well. And so I have
no idea. You said before the show, do you want to say it on the show who he reminded you of?
Shelton Gibson.
Yeah, Shelton Gibson. He reminded me of the same guy.
And he's just like, you know, if you hit him, he is out. You got to be able to track the ball better down the field as well. Right now he's all speed. So like you can hand Watkins, you can put the ball in Watkins' chest, jet sweep screen if you want to. And that's how you get him on the field. But besides that, I don't know. So it's very tricky. Like the Eagles wide receiver room already has unbelievable uncertainty because we don't know where they're going to play Deshaun. We've never seen Deshaun in Philadelphia, at least in 2.0 Deshaun in Philadelphia. We haven't seen JJ think a white side on the field enough to know where they're going to play him. We don't even know if Alshon's going to be here or not. And then we have three rookies and Marquise Goodwin. So it's like, there's literally nothing in terms of knowledge to work off of to figure out where these guys are going to be.
So it's beyond Muirhead, not just getting these guys coached up, but also on the rest of the coaching staff, the offensive minds to figure out how exactly they're going to deploy these guys and get the best results is what you're saying.
Yes. And it's like, I'll put it this way. Do not expect the Eagles passing offense to be better in week one.
You're right.
Week nine, hopefully.
Yeah.
Week one, no. Unless Deshaun's healthy and Alshon's back, in which case the passing offense should be better because they'll have veteran players who know what they're doing. And I guess in the case of Alshon, at least he's played with Carson before, though we don't know if he likes doing that. And Deshaun hasn't really, but at least he's been around long enough that it should be okay. You know, it's a very weird wide receiver room, Mike.
Don't they have the same thing kind of going on with what they're trying to cobble together in the defensive backfield and the job?
No, because they didn't bring in any rookies, Mike. No, I mean, they brought in Kayvon. Well, here's the thing with the defensive backfield and particularly corner. Darius Slay plays outside corner. All right. The rest of the Eagles depth chart at corner is Sidney Jones, Rasul Douglas, Avante Maddox, Kayvon LeBlanc, freaking Tremont Williams.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like, or Trevor Williams, excuse me. You know, and like Jalen Mills, maybe, question mark. No one really knows. Okay. And Nicole Roby Coleman. At safety, you have maybe Jalen Mills, Ronnie McLeod, and then Kayvon Wallace, Will Parks. You have about six players, no embellishment, that ideally play over the nickel and not the outside between your corner room and your safety room.
Hmm.
And Jalen Mills, which again, who knows? And then you have one player who you want over the outside, which is right. Darius Slay. Yeah. I would argue you have a second in terms of a player you would rather be on the outside than the slot, who is Rasul Douglas.
Rasul, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. The Corey Undlin Eagles never wanted to play Rasul Douglas. Didn't matter if Rasul was playing well or poorly. They wanted to play him. Large part because he was not well cast for playing 8 yards off the ball. You know, it go back to week one. Rasul Douglas is 8 yards off Terry McLaurin. Terry McLaurin stems directly to him. Rasul Douglas flips his hips, and now it's a race between Terry McLaurin and Rasul Douglas. At no point does Rasul Douglas get his hands on him, and Terry McLaurin just toasts him for a deep post. Touchdown. Mm. It's not Rasul's game. Marco Manuel was a defensive backs coach with Dan Quinn, was a defensive backs coach in Seattle during the Seattle Cover 3 era, which is an era that used defensive backs who looked exactly like Rasul Douglas up at the line of scrimmage, kick step, press Cover 3, disrupt at the line, carry them into a vertical third.
Yep.
Eagles are trying to trade Rasul Douglas, apparently. Well, I mean, like, so it's like the coaching staff addition seems to indicate they'd be more comfortable starting Rasul on the outside up at the line of scrimmage. The front office moves seem to indicate they want to trade him away. So, again, who knows what the situation there is with Rasul? Much like J-Jaw, couldn't tell you how they want to use him. Couldn't tell you whether or not he has a shot of being used.
Right.
Given what we've currently got from the roster and what we've currently got from the front office. The moral of the story here is that there's no way Darius Slay is not traveling with ones this year.
Right.
Right? Because it's something that they haven't done previously.
Yeah.
Under Schwartz.
Which is going to be fascinating to see, but yeah.
Right. If Slay does not travel with ones.
I'll lose my mind.
Well, there's no way you cover anybody. I mean, that's not true. You'll cover the wide receiver too, because Darius Slay will be on him. Wide receiver ones go on the other side.
But like, kind of like, do it like, if you think about it, last year when the Packers with Davante Adams was torching whoever the Eagles put out mm-hmm. there, and you're going to tell me that Slay wouldn't travel with Adams, I'd say you're right. An effing idiot.
And here's the problem, is that like, I love Darius Slay. I like the Darius Slay trade. I think Slay's a good corner.
Yeah.
Slay's film against Adams across the course of their careers... It's not the best film on the face of the planet.
Yeah, Adams gets him a little bit.
Yeah. Just things like, firstly, you're going to ask him to travel with ones. Secondly, he's going to lose to ones occasionally. Thirdly, let's say he travels with Julio and locks him down. Calvin Ridley against Sydney. Oh,
his film is a lot better against Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, who is covering him. Is it Avonte Maddox?
This is my thing, right? Is this just like, why... Don't we have another corner?
I don't get it. And Christian Fulton was there at 53. That's what pisses me off so much. Even beyond just not picking Fulton. Just right. Beyond that. But go ahead.
So if you ask me, the best way that this problem gets solved is if Marquand Manuel puts the Eagles in step kick, Seattle cover three, and Rasul Douglas is able to play on the outside. That's the avenue I see to having two outside starting corners who can live. Right? I think Rasul will lose battles. I think he'll win battles. I don't think Sewell is going to be a high-end NFL corner, too. But that's right now, like, if you ask me of all the routes to get a outside corner, two on the roster as it currently stands, I'd say, well, you know, 3 days ago, I would have told you draft one. But because we didn't, today it would be put Rasul off at the line, step kick cover three and go, right?
Here's my solution. Sorry to interrupt. Sign Prince Amukamara. And then I'm like, I'm totally fine with it.
Is he still on the roster? Or still
he's still out there.
Okay.
Like, would you prefer Prince Amukamara over the options they have right now at outside corner? He's been a part of some very, very good defenses. And yeah. He doesn't, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's older, but like at this point, who cares? Anyway, that's my solution. But it's not in the building right now, so, you know. Yeah.
I just don't, like, I like, you know.
He's better than Rasul.
I like... The Sean Bradley pick. I like the Casey Tuhill pick. I didn't like the Davion Taylor pick for how early it was, whatever.
Same.
I just like, you know, like, all right, you got three linebacker, special teamer, maybe edge rusher bodies. It's great news. Why does this team not want any good secondary players? I just don't know. Like, they drafted Sydney and Sewell in 2017 in 2 and 3, and you were like investing in the defensive backfield. And since then, it's been Maddox in the fourth round and Kayvon in the fourth round.
And we've been screaming for safety for a while now, and they've lost more than they've gained in that department,
right.
For sure.
It's like, all right, you bring in a fourth rounder once Malcolm leaves.
Yeah, did do it the year before.
Right, that fourth rounder would be a lot more ready.
Look, I've said, like, the whole, like, Jordan Love, Aaron Rodgers thing, like, Aaron Rodgers ain't teaching Jordan Love jack, but, like, I think at certain places and certain players, Malcolm Jenkins will teach the young guys something. Jason Peters will try to teach the young guys something. I think that's perfectly applicable in this situation. And the Eagles are just like, no, we'll wait till Malcolm's gone and bring in a totally fresh year, wet behind the ears, no training camp rookie.
I think to myself this. It's amazing to me that if you had told me in 2018 that in 2020, I would be talking about who's starting an outside corner for the Eagles, Sidney Jones or Rasul Douglas, I'd be like, you're kidding. There's no way. That this is still a conversation we're having.
Ben, any last words before we get out of here? What do you think of the
Wait, you don't want to talk UDFAs?
Oh God, I guess.
Embarrassing.
Oh. Yeah. Who are the UDFAs?
Listen, there's a treasured and harbored Eagles tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Which is every year in the UDFA cycle, grabbing some running back who's built like an absolute tank. Yeah. Right? Corey Clement. Last year, who do they have last year? Oh, frick.
Is it Adrian Killens this year? Is that what you're talking about?
Killens is like thick,
Michael,
but he's tiny.
I just saw Michael Warren.
Just every year. All right. Eagles 2019 draft class. This is I guess Elijah Holyfield, but they got him.
Michael Warren is basically Elijah Holyfield when it comes
to he's not,
like,
he's better.
What you're looking for. Yeah.
Nico Evans was last year. He was the Wyoming kid. He was like 220. And then, right, so then this year it's Michael Warren. Eagles fans are going to love Michael Warren.
I almost put him in my my day three guys the Eagles could target for running back because he's like that. How big is he? Is he like 235?
He is 5'10", 220 something.
5'10", 220 plus. Wow.
He is a chonk, a chonk, a chonk, chonk, chonk.
Thick as grits.
Yes. He's a healthy young man. He is a well-fed individual. I always would jokingly say, if you miss out on Zach Moss in the second, just come draft Michael Warren in the seventh, because he's just like, it's just like a bowling ball, right? It's
right,
like
right.
Tackling him just requires like a lever, you know, you gotta like find some way to like some sort of machinery to get him down. He has no juice at all. Ground out AAC defenses for Cincinnati last year. It was a ton of fun.
So who stands out on this list? Because I honestly don't know who any of these other guys are.
So Warren is fun. Dante Olsen, right? So if we're talking about the Eagles drafting players because of their measurables, everybody likes to talk about the 40 that they've been drafting for, but actually they've also been drafting extremely good jumpers. So like Rager, 97th and 98th percentile. This is Burt and Broad. Hurts, 86 and 97. Davian Taylor, 64 and 94. Kayvon, 81 and 96. Hightower, 84 and 61. Bradley, 64, 76. Quez, 64, 78. Two Hill, 91 and 92. So they're drafting upper percentile verts.
Explosive.
And really, really good broad jumpers. Dante Olsen, a 98th percentile vert and an 88th percentile broad. Now, this is what I call a Tecmo Bowl player. Dante Olsen plays on straight lines. He don't play on corners. Ain't nothing turn. This is just, he is huge. Montana played a Big Sky Conference, middle of that defense, 200 tackles or something this season, right? Like 156 or whatever the heck it was. He's just humongous and fast and doesn't turn. So just, all right, plays going left, full steam ahead to the left, just mowing over kids. Really fun to watch, really not great at football. But he's super explosive. He's the one who I would say, like, if anybody sticks, it's probably him because the athletic ability is really exciting. And like I say, he's a big dude. I liked Elijah Riley's film. He's a corner out of Army. He's a nickel. His Shrine Bowl was bad, a lot worse than I thought it was going to be. Noah Tongeai at Oregon State's a tight end. He's in your Josh Perkins mold. He's like 240. You know, he's a wide receiver. He's a big wide receiver. So he'll be fighting Perkins for that job. The Eagles have brought in good undrafted tight ends to try to beat out Perkins, though, and nobody really ever has. Raekwon Williams was much better in 2018 than he was in 2019. This is the defensive tackle out of Michigan State. He's got to learn how to use his hands. Like, he has really nice flashes, but he just lets his body get into contact way too much. So you got to teach him how to play with more patience and timing. And then Graylin Arnold is exciting. He's the one, him and then I'm learning more about Michael Jacquet. He's a Louisiana Lafayette kid. I don't know much about him. But Graylin Arnold is an exciting and an interesting one. Not a good tackler. He's been banged up for Baylor. When he's healthy, he's a safety who can rotate down into the slot, and then he can return as well. He's got good athleticism. He's the sort of dude who, like, he'll be a really good special teamer, and he'll fight for a roster spot that way.
Apparently, they gave Graylin Arnold $90,000 guaranteed. So.
Yeah, they gave Tongeai $100,000. The Eagles always, when it comes to UDFAs, are just like, hey, just how much do you want? A lot of money?
Right.
And they're like, yeah. I'm like, okay.
So I mean, that's how you attract him. That's how you get the best UDFAs in the world. So we're a UDFA factory. Ben, all right, that's enough right there.
That's too much. That was notes on five UDFAs. How dare you?
Get the heck out of here. Say goodbye to the gentle listeners.
Hey, thank you as always for listening to the Kissed and Solak Show here on BGN Radio. As we promised you, a full and ripe and pleasant draft week to get you through quarantine season and into the next part of quarantine season. But no, this was live sports. Thank you for joining us. The Eagles with 9 draft picks on the week. Jalen Rager, Jalen Hurts, Davian Taylor, Kevin Wallace, Sean Hightower, Sean Bradley, Quez Watkins, Prince Tegwanogo, and Casey Tuhill. Hey, by the way, we didn't talk about him. We're not done. I'm undunning this podcast.
Oh, goodness.
Prince Tega's got good film and good athleticism. He's like not healthy.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So the knee freaks teams out. He was unable to do pro day stuff and unable to do combine stuff and everything like that. In the event that he has even a 5-year career with Philadelphia, it will be on the roster.
Yeah.
He's going to hang. I think ideally.
His film was way higher than where he got selected. Yeah.
And this is a kid who he came over as a result of one of the programs that helps bring over kids who are in Africa to the United States to play organized high school ball. Yeah. He came over to play basketball. he started playing football to stay in shape for basketball season. And then all of a sudden he was like, yo, like, I'm a really good tight end. I think he was. And then he started playing offensive line in his senior year. Auburn, ridiculous athlete. He's like, he's like 310, I want to say. And he looks like he's like 240. You know what I mean? He just like carries it so well. He's awesome. Was my best player available for ages. So glad they drafted him. If he's healthy, he's offensive tackle 3 on this depth chart. And then Mailata's 4. I think, what's his name?
Driscoll.
Kick him Driscoll. Aside. Oh, I don't even have Driscoll written down on this list. The Eagles had 10 draft picks. And I when I went through all the athleticism, I only have 9. Driscoll is, to me, he's a guard center for the Eagles. If you were on another team, maybe he's a tackle, but the Eagles want bigger dudes to tackle. So I think he's a guard center. So the Eagles are reloading here at offensive line. But anyway, thanks for listening.
The kiss. We all we got. Oh.
Bye.
Wait up.
Reveal.
Do the thing.
Love you guys.
Yeah.
You done? Birds.
We all we got. We all we need. Fly, Eagles, fly.
P-G-N.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.